UK Wine Show, show number 68. Waitrose with head buyer Justin Howard Sneed. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 68 for the 14th of September 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're kicking off a series of three podcasts looking at UK wine retailers. We start with Justin Howard Sneed, head wine buyer at Waitrose. We talk to Justin about how Waitrose jockey for position in a crowded marketplace. Next week we're talking with Mike Rogers from boutique winery Fieldglass and Swigert, and we finish up with Tim Howe of Majestic and Decanter's Reader's top wine retailer for UK. With competition hot amongst the supermarkets, several are trying to differentiate themselves. Some, like Tesco, stack it high and sell it cheap, and as long as there's a two-for-one offer or some other discount mechanism for us, they think we'll be happy, while others go for service. Waitrose are clearly a leader at the high end of the wine buying public, with Decanter's Reader's naming it the top supermarket for wine buying. We talked to Justin about how they do this. But before we get into that, let's hear the news with our own top-rated newsreader, Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, German wine sales are on the up, but how will their carbon footprint stack up when the new British standard is introduced? But before that, news that English wine in Waitrose is starting to take off. The British retailer has 25% share of the grocery market due largely to its local sourcing policy. This means that wines that are produced within 30 miles of a branch can be listed locally and delivered direct to the branch. Although just 5 English wines are listed on a national basis, there are 25 listed locally. And it seems to be a policy that customers like, judging by the fact that Waitrose is now selling almost twice as much English wine as it did last year. Next up, it seems we can't get enough of German wine, as global demand for German Riesling outstrips supply. Germany produces 2/3 of the world's Riesling, and the UK is its biggest export market. While German wine is generally up 7% in the UK, the US is growing even faster, with sales up 27%. In the UK, sales are strongest in the premium sector, up 120% for wines priced £6 to £7. And our final story this week is news of a new British standard that's to be developed and applied across a wide range of products, including wine. The Carbon Trust and DEFRA are working with the British Standards Institute to develop a single standard that could be introduced as early as 2008. We think that German wines, given their proximity to the UK and the country's long-standing support of the green debate, may well fare better than their continental counterparts and tip the balance with today's eco-friendly consumer. That's all this week, but 20 years ago, in September 1987, bodega workers in Jerez went on strike on the most critical days of the sherry harvest. By holding the sherry harvest to ransom, they hoped to win shorter working hours and better procedures and conditions. We're not sure of the outcome, but we do know that 20 years on, sherry is still being made and is said to be making a comeback. We love Fino sherry with olives, and the Pedro Ximenex sherry we introduced into our hen party tastings is going down a treat served over ice cream. Don't forget, you can get more detail on these news stories on the news homepage of our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. Gosh, a way to measure carbon footprints. This will be interesting. Possibly a bit of a headache for those participating in it. After all, spraying and general agricultural practices produce vast swathes of carbon dioxide. And just talking to organic producers about the hoops they have to jump through to get certification, I can imagine this new standard is going to be very complicated and onerous. I'll also be interested if they allow one of my personal bugbears, netting off of carbon by planting trees. Plant a tree, it absorbs carbon for a period of time, and then it stops. Eventually the tree dies and releases the carbon, so another tree has to be planted to replace it. Hopefully they won't allow carbon netting. I'm also very disappointed with German wine drinkers. For years, German wines have been a wine fan's best kept secret. Sure, they're not fashionable with gluggers of cheap plonk, but there are some great wines, and because they're not trendy, they are relatively cheap. I hope this isn't going to change. as at the moment it's easy to find a 9 to 10 year old Spatleys Riesling with bags of character for under £12, which to me is a steal. I hope people continue to think of German wine as Blue Nun, but maybe the tide is turning. And last but not least, Waitrose is the biggest seller of English wine in the UK. This does have to be tempered, as it doesn't include sales from wineries. Cellar door sales is a huge part of the English wine trade. But we're going to talk to Justin about this. One thing though, I mentioned Canary Wharf in the show. For those of you who aren't familiar with London or Canary Wharf, it's the new financial capital of London, with lots of bankers and wealthy city types hanging around there. So let's get into the show. Hi, I'm here with Justin Howard-Sneed. He's the wine buying manager at Waitrose, and you manage all the wine buying team.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I've been here at Waitrose for a couple of years, and I've been managing the team for about a year now.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about Waitrose and how you guys position yourself in quite a competitive market. Do you want to give us a quick overview of what you think Waitrose's points of difference are?
Well, I think what we try very hard to do at Waitrose is accepting the fact that we are a supermarket where customers can come in and buy a wide range of groceries. Within that, we have a wine department. We try to position ourselves between the large supermarkets and the specialists so that we do the job of a supermarket wine range extremely well, but we also try and compete very comprehensively with the specialists. And we do that through having a range that is tailored to perhaps a more discerning palate, and also by having partners who work in the branches who are highly trained and highly motivated and knowledgeable about wine. And so that level of service allied with the quality of the wine that we select are probably the two key areas that we'd like to differentiate ourselves.
Just on the service level, recently Waitrose did an advertising campaign talking about their masters of wines and showing people going off into the field. Are they some of those people? Are the people available in the stores?
Yes, we have, as well as our team of buyers, we have in total 5 masters of wine who are employed by directly or as consultants to Waitrose. And our team of buyers are very expert in their areas. But we also have, working out in the branches, about 180 people who are WSET trained, who have a good level of knowledge about the wine range and about wine in general, and who are available to help customers to order wines that are perhaps not stocked in the branch, deal with customer queries, and also run the department and make sure that the wine standards are kept high.
So you have a person in each store that runs wine department?
We have, in almost every branch, we have wine specialists. Some branches have more than one wine specialist where there's a particular need. Someone like our Canary Wharf branch, for instance, has 3 or 4 of them, because it's a branch that has a lot of customers who are very excited about wine. And until recently, our specialists haven't been very clearly differentiated in branch, but they are receiving wine specialist uniforms over the autumn. So it should become easier when you walk into a Waitrose to identify which of the partners who are walking around are actually the wine specialist.
Is it a bit like the fishmonger and the butcher and all that
exactly
sort of
that,
stuff?
Exactly that, yes. Yeah.
Okay. And what sort of hours do they keep? If I go to a wine shop, when would I be best if I want to get some advice?
Well, I think every branch has its own trading patterns. The intention is to try and make sure that the wine specialists are available at times of day when wine purchasing is strongest, which tends to be more at the weekends and the evenings. And it's up to every individual branch as to when the wine specialist is available. Obviously, in most branches, the average number of wine specialists would be 1, and therefore we're open for quite a large number of hours in the day, and they're not there all of the time.
Sure.
But they should be there about 50% of the time. And they are also responsible within their branch for training some of their other colleagues in more basic level of wine knowledge and information. So there should always be someone there. And often, sometimes the duty managers or even the branch manager has a certain level of interest and knowledge about wine. So there's a good level of knowledge within a branch at any time.
Okay. What about, do they get to taste the wines regularly themselves? Do you guys do staff training for them in terms of accessing the range?
Yes, we do quite a large amount of staff training. Initially, when they become a specialist, they go through a program which involves being taken up to a WCT certificate level with a Master of Wine. They also get the opportunity outside of that every year. They get several opportunities in the year to taste a range of wines. One of those is every year they come down to the London Wine Trade Fair. They spend a day at the trade fair. We arrange a visit round various of our supplier stands to taste a wide range of wines. And also this year we had the chance to put them all together in a room and present some of our new own label wines to them with the winemakers from the individual wineries. And they also get other sessions that are arranged through the year for tasting. And we run a conference once a year where we gather them all together. This year we were at the Chapeldown Winery in Kent.
Oh, yeah.
And we had five separate days down there because the room isn't particularly large. And we had a lot of non-specialist partners, a lot of the people who are in the rest of the management team in the branches who wanted to come too. So we got a chance to show them a lot of interesting wines.
You also said that the quality of the wines was a key point of difference. Just on that, what's your average price that you sell your wine at?
The average price is approaching £6.
Oh, that's quite good.
It's good. It's very good for a supermarket. Yeah. We're quite substantially differentiated from the other supermarkets who are mostly around the £4, just over £4 mark. We are probably £5.85 around at the moment. It varies from time of year to time of year. Yeah. It'll go over £6 at certain times of year. We were promoting champagne quite a lot in June, and the level, I think, went over £6 at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you've got a reputation of trying to source locally. Does that mean that you purchase a lot of UK wines?
It does, yes. I mean, across the board, we have a very good local sourcing policy, meats, cheeses, jams, pickles, that kind of thing. It's a very robust policy. It's one that we've been doing for a long time, and it's one that we really, truly believe in. The rule for a local product is that the product should be produced within 30 miles of the branch, and that's quite strictly adhered to. And it actually has a good degree of meaning as to what local actually means. As a result, we have, for our English wine selection, we actually have two white wines listed nationally, one rosé and two or three sparkling wines. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, we have about as many as 25 wines listed locally, and that means that a winery in, say, Sussex can supply five or six branches within 30 miles, and they supply the branch directly. They deliver the stock direct to the branch. They send in the invoices centrally to us. We approve the original wine and the price, but then the relationship's left up to the branch to do their ordering.
So you check the wines first yourself, the MWs, your masters of wine, or your buying team taste all the wines before saying, yep, you can have that.
Exactly. And we did a reasonably good review of the range, which started early this year. Put in quite a lot of new wines, and we're currently selling almost twice as many English wines this year as we did last year. There's been a lot of press about English wine with the recent vintages that have been very good, and it's really very gratifying to see that commitment to English wine is starting to take off. And our market share for English wine is over 25%.
Nationally?
Nationally.
So you sell 25% of the English wine?
That is recorded by organisations like Nielsen, who talk to big retailers and take their scan sales. So there's a certain amount of cellar-door sales that's probably not included in those figures.
Sure.
But of the big retailers, our grocery share is about 4%. Our wine share is about 6%. So we quite substantially over-trade in wine. But within English wine, it's as high as 25%.
Oh, that's very good. Very good indeed. We're a big supporter of English wine here. In English wine, what do you think are the big surprising things for maybe in the last couple of years?
Well, how surprising. I mean, sparkling wine clearly is going to be a big arrow in our quiver, as it were. It's probably the main point of interest on an international level for English wine. Personally, I'm very interested in light floral aromatic styles. Grapes like Bacchus, I think, do a very good job of taking a style that's a little akin to Sauvignon Blanc, making it a little bit more floral. Nice 10-11% alcohol level, not too strong. I think that's what we do extremely well. I actually worked in an English vineyard for 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
I had a three or four year stint in my career as a winemaker and did some work in Kent in a vineyard.
Oh, excellent.
I'm quite sympathetic to the cause.
Excellent. Getting back to your main wines that you use, that you sell as part of your business, you talked about your average price being quite good, and you talked about your wine selection being maybe a wee bit more high-end. Why do you get positioned slightly more high-end wines?
Well, I think there's several reasons. One is that we have a customer base in Waitrose of people who are looking for those kind of wines. So that range is tailored to what our customers are asking us for. We have a broad range. We stock a number within the. We have approximately 750 wines in a good size Waitrose branch, going up to about 1,000 in a branch like Canary Wharf, which has a range of of wine specially sourced for it. Within that range, we have a few of the big brands that are available everywhere, because a lot of our customers want to buy a well-known brand that they've heard of, like Campiglia, Rioja, or Casillero del Diablo Cabernet. And where we find the quality of those wines is good, we're very happy to stock them. But we want to be a different retailer. We don't want to carry the same range as every other supermarket. So we keep that area of the range relatively tight. We don't stock 25 varieties of Jacob's Creek in different sizes. We do maximise our focus on the kind of £6 to £10 area, and we look for interesting, quirky, diverse wines that keep our wine enthusiastic customers happy.
What's exciting you at the moment?
Well, I'm very exercised by aromatic grape varieties that are not so well known. So a lot of exciting places like Greece producing Certico. I was actually in Croatia on holiday and tasted some really fantastic Croatian wines. Northern Italy's got some lovely varieties, and Andrew Shaw, our buyer for Italy, has just bolstered the range quite substantially with an Arnais and a Falanghina and a few other exciting varieties. There's been a lot of focus on interesting red wines, and for white wine above £5, if you weren't interested in Chablis or Sancerre, 5 years ago there wasn't very much available, but now there's a lot more interest, and we're increasing our range as a result.
Okay. Getting into some of the more difficult questions I want to ask, how do you guys sit in the screwcap, cork, zork, diam debate in terms of closures? Do you guys have a preference?
Well, I think we recognise that we've got a wide range of customers, and those customers have got lots of different opinions on what they want to see closing their bottles. So our primary concern is to offer a range, and we will be guided to some extent by what our customers then buy from us. We are big fans of any closure that produces a bottle of wine that is taint-free, but we recognise that in some cases our customers want to buy a wine closed with cork, traditional cork, and we're also very keen to ensure that the core of the traditional cork industry is well supported, as long as they're producing good quality corks.
Yeah. Have you looked at diam?
We have, yes. We have had a number of wines that we sell that are stocked with diam, and we've been very pleased so far. We haven't had any problems. It performs very well, and it's certainly a closure we would be happy to encourage our suppliers to use.
The other thing that's been in the news a lot is de-alkalized wine, you know, removing the alcohol from wine. Obviously, Tesco's listed a wine recently and then had to pull it. What's your opinion on de-alkalized wine?
Well, I would perhaps differentiate between de-alcoholised, where the alcohol's perhaps entirely removed, and wine that's had the alcohol level lowered. I think it's a great shame that legislation prevents wines reaching the shelf that customers are clearly demanding at the moment. There's been a lot of talk about it. I think I'm not sure the vast majority of customers have picked up on that trend, but there certainly are a number who are interested in drinking wines of lower alcohol levels. And it would be... it's a shame that some of those wines that are being made, that are tasting very good, are not reaching the market through legislative reasons. And if they are to be put on the market, they have to be called product of fermented grape juice, partially de-alcoholized, which is not such a catchy term as wine.
Maybe it'll catch on. Method traditionnel seems to have cut ahead of champagne for a wee bit. What sort of volumes do you guys have relative to maybe some of the other competitors in the supermarket, and maybe Majestic's, since we're going to be talking with him as well?
Well, as I said, our share of the wine off-trade is about 6%. So we're not as big as any of the big four supermarket groups, but we're probably at the next level with one or two of the specialists, like Threshers and Majestic. Pound for pound, I can't tell you exactly where we would sit on that scale. We do punch above our weight in certain areas, so New Zealand wine, champagne, English wine, as we've discussed, we would be quite significantly ahead of that. So in some of the more premium wine areas, we're a significant purchaser of volume, but we can also sell as little as 10 or 15 cases if we sell that only on the internet and in our Canary Wharf branch.
You mentioned Canary Wharf a few times. I had a look on your website, and you seem to be running quite a lot of tastings that are open to the public at Canary Wharf. What's the focus of Canary Wharf? Is it just because there's lots of really rich people there wanting to buy wine?
Well, it was a shop that was opened some years ago as a really unexplored area. There were very few wine retailers there, and we took a reasonably bold step of having a large shop there, which has paid off extremely well because there's an awful lot of people who work in that area who are looking for something to do at lunchtime or something to do in the early evening when they leave work, looking for somewhere to shop, and also looking for an interesting shopping experience that... If we have a wine bar and you can go and open a bottle there, you pay £5 above the shelf rate for the corkage, which means you can drink a £200 bottle of wine for £205 when it might cost you £600 in a restaurant. So there's a good hardcore of wine customers who use it for those reasons. But there's also just a large number of people there, and we're one of the only wine shops that offers a really good range, and it does particularly well. Having said that, we're now opening a food hall in the basement of the John Lewis in Oxford Street, mm-hmm. which will be open in the autumn. We've just developed our Marylebone store in central London, and bringing some of the values that we've learned at Canary Wharf to some of our other branches is something that we are thinking quite deeply about at the moment.
Some groups sort of talk about supermarkets in a reasonably negative way in terms of driving down prices and making wine and alcohol more accessible, which obviously isn't what all groups are into, not necessarily myself. But how do you guys feel on that position? You know, you are effectively providing a drug to the public. Do you worry about that?
Well, we take selling alcohol responsibly very seriously. We work quite closely with Alcohol in Moderation. We published a leaflet with them, which we produce and sell, give away, distribute in our branches, and we are aware of the concerns. I think that it's fair to say that we're not at the front line of the people who are perhaps more readily criticised for some of the practices. We sell alcohol at very sensible discounts. We don't do half price wine promotions. We don't promote any of our wines below cost. The essential strategy behind our promotional program is to trade customers up to better wines and to enhance the diversity of the wines that they will choose by tasting a whole region at once, asking customers to come and buy into an area perhaps they might not be familiar with, and to try and trade people away from perhaps their more normal wines into more adventurous and interesting wines. We always have wines on shelf regularly that are as cheap, if not cheaper, than the cheapest wines on promotion. So we're not promoting deeper and lower than the lowest price on shelf at any time, which I think is a responsible position.
What about every Christmas, everybody goes out and buys port? After Christmas, the port industry always complains that they get one crack at selling a load of port, and it's always sold at half price or on discount, and they never really get a decent crack at the whip in terms of making a decent profit from that because all the wines are sold on discount. What's your position on that?
Well, I think our first position is that we only ever want to sell a wine that's good value at the original price. Now, clearly our customers like to buy wine on discount, as do customers of wine all over the land, and we need to be competitive. So it's our intention, first of all, where we stock similar wines, to be competitive on price. We don't intend to be the cheapest in the market. We don't want to lead the market down in price, but we would like our customers to understand that when they come into Waitrose, they'll pay the same price in the vast majority of cases for ordinary brands that they see out there in other retailers. In terms of the specific case of port, Christmas is the time of year when a lot of people will buy a bottle of port, and therefore it's the time of year when perhaps that purchase might be stimulated by seeing a good discount. We will promote port on discount at Christmas, but not nearly as deeply as some of our competitors. We hope to offer very good value. In terms of what the port industry choose to do about it, all port has to come from Portugal and is all supplied by port suppliers. They have some control over what they supply. They don't have control over what the retailers choose to do with the price. I would regard Waitrose's position as one where we work closely with the suppliers. That may not be true of all other retailers.
Okay. And just the last question, own label wines. Do you guys do own label wines?
Yes, we do. We don't have a very wide range, but we do have approximately 30 own label wines. And we have actually just launched a new range of more premium own label wines where we've worked in partnership with some of the world's best wine suppliers, especially where we've chosen a wine from, let's say, Châteauneuf-du-Pape. When we thought about Châteauneuf-du-Pape, we thought, who would we like to work with? And we were delighted to persuade the Perrin family, who own Château de Bocastel, to make our Châteauneuf-du-Pape for us. And so the New Zealand Sauvignon is made by Villa Maria, The Barossa Shiraz is made by St. Hallett's, and there's, I think, 12 wines in the initial wave, of which I think now 10 are in branch, all of which are working with very reputable suppliers in their regions, and we are looking at expanding that range in the future.
We did an interview with Matthew Jukes a long time ago, and he talked about Sainsbury's Taste the Difference being no real difference. Do you try and overperform on your own label, or are you trying to give confidence in the brand?
We are trying to be absolutely sure that the quality at the price point is extremely good value. When we were choosing the wines, we were careful to choose the right suppliers and careful to blend very good blends. The wines have now just arrived in, and we are beginning the process of benchmarking them against our competitors. It's very rare you'll ever win 100% of all your benchmarking tests, but we would certainly aim for a very good score against the wines from our competitors.
Okay. I think we'll wrap it up there, Justin. Thank you very much for your time.
That's my pleasure.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Justin. I thought he gave the position of Waitrose very well. They're attempting to position themselves between a supermarket and a wine specialist. And with volumes that are a bit less than the four big supermarkets, this is probably a good position to do so. I like the idea of their own label using top producers to make them. But with all own label wines, it's all about the quality of the wines and the blend. So don't expect the same quality wines as you get from the estate bottled wines. I also did think Justin copped out a wee bit on the port question, but it's a difficult one, and it would be a brave person not to heavily discount port at Christmas time. I did like the fact that they talk about using discounts as a way of trading up rather than providing the cheapest wines. And I think this Christmas, I'm going to have a good look at the supermarkets and in particular Waitrose port offer, just to make sure they're not discounting heavily on the cheapest line. Still on wine at supermarkets, I rang the strangest tasting for Marks & Spencer's shop floor wine team last week. I had a very simple brief, run a wine tasting for 120 people, but don't include any wine. Needless to say, we managed to pull it off and they had a great time. But what I liked was while I was backstage getting ready to go on, the head of the grocery buying team announced that they were going to try and get the wine people to spend more time on the stands and fixtures associated with wine. And this was met with huge applause. This sort of thing gladdens my heart to see such an enthusiastic group of wine fans. For sheer enthusiasm, it was a joy to spend time with. And don't forget our online poll's been running for a while now, and we're just about to close it off. The question was, should wine alcohol units and or calories be included on the front labels of bottles? I'm a big fan of this, and I think if people knew how many calories they had in wine and beer, you'd see a lot more image-conscious young people drinking a bit less wine. To take the survey, just go to ukwineshow.co.uk and fill in the form and have your say. Early results indicate that it's a pretty even split between those who think that the units should be on the front of the bottle and those who think the units and calories should be on the front. That pretty much ends the show for this week. Next week, we're going to be talking with boutique wine merchant Mike Rogers from Fieldglass and Swigert. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.